Again, welcome back. So we watched stuff 111. I am Jeremy. Shahid is joining me as always after a few quick minutes of banter that we should have recorded. What's going on, man?
Nothing much. Hope everyone's enjoying their day. Right before we start the show, I got a package for a new receiver, and we both talk about music and receivers all the time. There is a difference between older stuff that used to cost a lot of money and newer stuff that's lighter. And one of the main things people used to say, even though it's not always the case, is like they, and it's like with furniture too, it's the whole thing, like the more it weighs, the better it is. It's always been that idea, even though people always go like streamline stuff. Yeah, that receiver I got was like 42 pounds, and it felt like it was 42 pounds. Like that thing is huge and heavy, and it's.
Do they even make a receiver that's under 40 pounds? I mean, I've had the same one for a while, and whenever I move it, I'm like, oh my God, isn't stuff supposed to get smaller?
Yeah, most of them now are like, you got to spend money to get like heavy stuff these days. Not like I was back in the day. Like most of my receivers are kind of new, and I think the heaviest one I have is like 30 pounds. Most of them, the other ones I have are like between 15 and 20. But no, this one is like a good 42, 43 pounds, and it's probably about 20% bigger than my biggest one, and my biggest one isn't necessarily small either. Like, it's one of those old flagship models where it's kind of like they don't make them anymore because people don't really – it's that whole thing is like people don't get over-engineered stuff anymore because it's kind of like I'm going to replace it in 2 years anyway, so why bother?
I still have the same TV. Thank God it wasn't my TV that was the issue before. I still have the same TV going on over 10 years. And I understand that other stuff looks a lot better, but it still functions just fine. So I like buying stuff for the long haul.
Yeah, you sound like my wife because she's like that too.
You know, you pay for quality, which is kind of lost now too. Mm-hmm.
She's like, if it's not broken, why replace it? And I'm in between. Like, I don't have to get the newest thing, but I try to get something that will at least last me like 4 to 5 years, where it's kind of like too technical. Because it's kind of like, it depends on your time frame. Like, depending on when you got it. You got it before, 1080 was a thing, much less 4K, if it's that old. So it's almost kind of a jump, like, you know, It was a big jump from VHS to DVD. It wasn't as big as jump as like from DVD to Blu-ray, and from Blu-ray to 4K. It's basically like it's a jump, but you got to spend a lot of money to notice. Like, it's everything has to be on point for it to know, to make a difference. Otherwise, it's not worth it.
Yeah, I've got a 1080, but I think the frame, what was it, 64 hertz. Like, the hertz is way down from what it, you know, they are now. But mm-hmm. I when I bought it, I tried getting top of the line because I'm like, all right. I think it was my uncle told me, he's like, if you're going to get something, amongst other gems I was told, if you're going to get something, especially electronics, get top of the line so that next year, at least it's middle of the road instead of obsolete. And I'm like, all right, that makes sense. So it sucks, you know, it sucks taking that hit to begin with. But, like, now, I look at the TVs now. They got curved TVs. I got a 52-inch one, and I look at it, and these things, the new ones are, what, maybe an inch thick total? And I think the screen itself is about an inch thick with the, then you got the back and all that stuff. So, I was loving looking for a TV anymore. Mind you. Absolutely loving all the features and everything else, but I wasn't digging the price. So,
yeah. And especially some of the ones now where they don't even have a back anymore. It's like they're like wallpaper thin, where all the plugs and stuff are in like the sound, like in the cord, or it's like a separate box where it's like you can hunt it like a picture. It's like, yeah, you want, if you got $8,000 to $9,000, go right ahead. But people don't have, like, I always tell people when it comes to anything like electronics, like anything buying, it's basically three classes of people. It's the one where you just got to get the item to get you through tomorrow, and it's like whatever, like a screwdriver or a fork, something like that. Then it's the, like, B-plus item. most people, if you got the money, they'd be just fine with a B, like a B or B plus. It's like the third or fourth best. They use it, they like it, but they're not going to spend a whole lot of time fiddling around with it, and they'll be just fine. And then it's the assholes at the front where they got to get top of the line stuff, and it's like, yeah, that's a rabbit hole where once you dip your foot in, your whole body falls in. And it's funny where that's a small percentage, but their purchases fund everybody else. Like the people who buy the $9,000 and $10,000 TVs are the reason why that same company can make $600 TVs.
Well, yeah, who's it? Who was the cheap one? Vizio used to be like the cheap one.
Yeah,
and even they now are getting up there. Wasn't that a Walmart brand or something?
Yeah.
And then they kind of went all over the place.
Yeah, Hisense is the cheap one now. But even then, it's kind of like, and it's like some other company that's working like Amazon or something like that. Yeah, you can get a 4K 55-inch TV for like $500.
Yeah, I think it was Element, I think. And that used to be the Best Buy brand. I'm not sure if it still is or not, if Amazon's selling it like that. But I immediately looked at it, like, I'm like, Element, that's what I drive. And I mean, that car is solid. I would hope the TV would be, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to be. But
yeah,
it's funny though. You talked about third or fourth best, because I'm sure the TV talk is riveting everybody, especially for the people who have new TVs. It's like, shut up. And basically, what I'm getting at is, I don't know if it's third or fourth best, but after the last Transformers movie came out, they were talking about a Bumblebee movie. Apparently, they're still going through with it, and everyone's favorite wrestler, I would say probably the most popular wrestler in the world.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's like still a current wrestler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's him. Like it's definitely him. It's
okay. John Cena. You would have people argue though.
Nah.
And it's like well, overall, no. Yeah.
Mainstream, like if people who don't watch wrestling know who John Cena is, that's how you know like who's popular. Like it's that whole Hulk Hogan thing where like you don't have to follow wrestling, you knew who Hulk Hogan was. You necessarily didn't like, you might have heard of Steve Austin. Like it's kind of like you got to hit the top of the thing where you don't watch wrestling, but if somebody told you that name, you know who it was. If you saw a commercial, you know who it was. And it's kind of like that list has kind of been small through history, and like now it's definitely John Cena. Like if it's, because all the other ones that might have been don't wrestle anymore, it's kind of like The Rock doesn't count. John Cena's more. If it's not John Cena, maybe Brock Lesnar. But that's kind of like they like in different waters, where Brock Lesnar does more sports things, but John Cena does more outside sports things. So I still would say probably like John Cena, like as far as like overall popularity. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, I wasn't gonna argue that, but then when I started to say it, I went, well, some people, I think, would try and disagree with that, but... And it's going to be the online guys. Well, no, Kenny Omega's more... I was like, oh, God, no. That's not what I mean. So, but John Cena, you know, the... what was it? Rusev tweeted out, he's not a part-timer, he's an all-timer. Is going to be leaving WWE again and to go film a part in the Bumblebee spinoff movie. Now,
not just a part... Male lead.
Oh, he's the actual male lead? Oh.
Yes.
Well.
Yeah, and it's directed by Travis Knight, who did Kubo and the Two Strings, which was a very good animated. It's kind of like animated. It's like that funny. It's not like that stop motion. It had like this look, weird look. I think it's almost like kind of like it was like stop motion / watercolor. Like it had a real unique, expensive look, and it was like a very well done movie. And Haley Steinfeld is the other person that's in the movie, and it's set in the 80s. It's hilarious. Like Haley Steinfeld, she was the little girl that was in True Grit, the remake one.
Mm-hmm.
With Jeff Bridges.
Okay.
Yeah, and she's been in the Pitch Perfect movies and some other stuff. So she's in like 3 Days to Kill. Like, so she's been working. So she's known. She's a name. It's funny where this is probably like John Cena's like biggest movie role. because it's like he's the main role in like a big, it's a spin-off Transformers movie, and the last Transformers movie didn't make as much as the previous one. It's still a Transformers movie, like, so it's still a name movie, not like a direct-to-DVD movie. And I was having a conversation with some people, and it was funny when you think about who's the three biggest like wrestlers to become like movie stars, and it's like The Rock, Batista, and John Cena, and how weird their paths have taken to reach those points.
Well, yeah, it's funny you mentioned Batista. That was one of the other titles, one of the other topics I wanted to bring up. We'll get to that in a second.
It's funny.
The problem with this Bumblebee movie, just by reading off a little bit though, it's a prequel. So who gives a shit? You know he's going to survive. Like this, I didn't see the last Transformers movie because I.
Are you really asking who cares about? Are you really asking who cares about prequels?
Well, I mean, hey, the Star Wars one. They aren't. Most of the time, they're not good.
The last three Star Trek movies are basically prequels.
No, the last three Star Treks not reboots. Reimagining.
But you know they're not dying. It's not. It's the whole thing. It's like we're starting way over. Kirk joining Starfleet.
Yeah.
It's the first thing in Enterprise. It's not like you're going to have Star Trek and like Bones has a stroke or something like that. So yeah, it's kind of like, you know, reboot, reimagining.
Yeah.
It's kind of on the same boat. And to be honest, it's like it's Transformers. You could put it whatever time frame you want, and it doesn't make a difference because characters will show up in one movie, not show up in the other one. They keep moving timelines. Like, oh, they first started around during the moon landing, and then it's like, oh, they were here when King Arthur was here, and then it was like, oh, they were here when the cavemen were here, and like they were here when the dinosaurs were here. So like with a franchise like Transformers, the timeline. Like it being a prequel was like a prequel to what? Because it's like they had stuff in the past, even the last Transformers movies, they had scenes with Bumblebee fighting the Nazis. So it was like
I know we already talked about that, but it still cracks
me
up.
So like a series like this, it's kind of like that. I get weird coming from that whole thing, but with this series, that's more like, you know, a setting thing. That's other than how it affects the plot. Beyond that, it's irrelevant.
Okay, I don't mean to cut this topic off, but what I was reading off of Yahoo, it's talking about the competition it's going to face.
I saw that too.
Aquaman? Okay, cool. Did you know they're making a Mary Poppins Returns?
Yeah. With, what's her face? What's her name? The British Emily Blunt, I think.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, people see these...
That's what I don't get. I as soon as I see the title, I'm like, nope.
It's not for you. It's for your grouchy ass head nieces and nephews. Just keep in mind, it's a whole generation of people who they may have heard these things. They've never seen them. It's like when the Beauty and the Beast remake was a thing, that was not for us. That's for us to take our kids. That's to take nieces and nephews. Like
or
you know,
or your middle aged. 20-year-old stepson and his girlfriend who just went gaga for it.
Like, yeah, it's
you guys watch the cartoon.
That's not the same. And that's what people don't get when they talk about who these remakes for. Like, sometimes it's for the grown folks. Most of the time, it's for not for us. It's for the kids. Like, it's because it's kind of like, you know, it's for, like, I didn't watch Fantasia. I know what Dumbo is, but I've been sitting around watching Dumbo. Come on now. Like, that movie came out when? What, the 40s? The 50s? However old that damn movie is? Like, yeah. So, it was before I was able to go to I didn't catch it first run on the theaters, basically what I'm saying. So.
Holy fuck, man. All right. I was like, you said the 40s. I'm like, no way. That came out in 1941?
Yes.
Those things are that gorgeous and they're that old?
Yes.
Holy
I knew it was old.
Shit.
Yeah, like, Disney's been doing this for a long-ass time. It's kind of like, my mom is in her 70s, and she wasn't born yet when Dumbo came out. So when they talk about they're doing a remake of Dumbo, they're like, who was for? I'm like, I don't know. The people who didn't serve in World War I. Who want to see Dumbo in a movie theater? That's who it's for. Like, everybody don't want to see Gone with the Wind, the original.
1937 was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Dude, I know. Like you're saying, I've never watched these. These movies are absolutely stunning to see. And now the knowing the age of these things is that is
looked that good that long ago.
That was insanity. Wow. You know, it's funny because when I didn't really see these movies when I was a kid. I think I saw The Black Cauldron. And I'm drawing a blank on. I saw one other Disney movie in theaters, and the rest were VHS when they were on TV. Because remember, all this stuff used to be on network TV as events. And I guess I never put two and two together of just how old these things were, and especially the animation style. They still hold up now. I'm blown away right now. This is crazy.
Hand-drawn stuff normally holds up because people don't draw any better. It's like you might draw with a computer, but a hand is still a hand. That's the difference between like hand-drawn animation compared to every other type of animation where you do computers and stuff like that. Like stuff from back in the day does not hold up now because the technology was different.
Hand-drawn is
a pen, paper, and imagination. And if you were skilled with drawing, it's going to look good. It's like paintings that look good in the 12th century are still going to look good a thousand years later. Like, it's not like they use a computer, they use their hand. But the only Disney one I saw in the theater, and it was weird because it must have been like probably a re-release, was Fantasia. I remember I was like maybe four, five, and my sister took me to see it, and I remember, I'm like, I couldn't tell you anything about it except saying it was a beautiful movie. And that's the one thing I remembered. So,
the original point of Fantasia was to add another scene to it and excise the beginning. That movie was made to come out every year, and it never happened that way. That's why when Fantasia 2000 came out, it had extra stuff on it because it was supposed to start that whole thing. Where, all right, so by the time you got to like Fantasia 2005, whatever, it would be a completely different movie than Fantasia 2000. And it never worked out that way, which I thought that was an interesting concept to go with, but I don't know. It almost seemed like a greed thing, because you're just putting the same movie out every year, except you're putting something new on. I mean,
are you accusing Disney for being greedy?
I know.
Thinking about money.
Possibly.
How dare. Yeah. How dare you.
But... yeah, so, all right, I'm coming back down now, because, wow. Anyways.
But back to the whole John Cena thing, it's kind of like, it's funny how his career has gone, because first he did the whole action. It's funny, like, he took the same path as The Rock did. It was just, he had the same pitfalls. It was kind of like, he tried the action thing, and it's kind of like, John Cena is a security guard, just seeing weird, like Marine, like he was a former Marine, and he's working as security guards. Like, this big jacked up dude walking around with a flashlight does not look normal. And him trying to interact with people just look weird, the same way it did when The Rock looked weird. It's kind of like, John Cena is a huge man, and nothing he does changes the fact that he's a huge man. Like, you're putting him around normal-sized people, and you realize, like, how big he is. And he did, like, action stuff. And it's kind of like, direct the DVD, and it's like, it's that whole thing is like, basically, blah, was that whole thing. And then you thought like, okay, he probably won't do movies anymore, because this whole thing was like, I'm just doing it because WWE asked me to, and yada, 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 and you don't think anything of it. And then he starts doing comedy stuff, and out of nowhere, it's like, wow, John Cena is very funny, and funny in an adult way. And it was kind of like, he built on that where he wasn't in movies a lot, but whenever he was in there, he was like still in scenes, and he was like one of the best parts of the movie. I haven't seen that Tour de Pharmacy thing on HBO. I heard he was funny in that. Like, so to see him now, it's kind of like he's getting roles, he's doing more drama stuff, and he's being like the lead in a Transformers movie. If there's any doubt that John Cena is not long for WWE, this kind of like, don't get your hopes up. you know, C Nation, like, yeah, he's out. He's already a certain age anyway. He's like close to 40. He has nothing else to prove in wrestling, and he has a career outside of wrestling, so why even bother?
And it's funny you say that, because when we were recording this, this is before the John Cena Nakamura match on Tuesday, and we'll be done long before that starts. But by the time this comes out, we'll already know the results. But a little wrestling talk real quick. I mean, as soon as you sent that to me, the first thing I said was, well, he's either losing to Nakamura or losing to Jinder. Because he's got to take, I'm guessing he's got to take off. I mean, I know he just got cast, but, you know, just because they're not shooting doesn't mean they're not going through script, like table reads and all that stuff. So, and you, all right, and this is obviously opinion. What's the best move for it then? Like, what's the best move for tonight or...
Nakamura win. I mean, that's the whole...
thing.
And that's the whole thing. It's funny where people been talking about how much complaining or everything like that. And it's like, this is... It's funny where, for the longest time, people wanted John Cena to do what he's doing now, and now he's doing it, people can't accept it. It's like, he's basically a part-timer that has a big name. His name means things. And when you beat him, it makes you important. Like, AJ Styles, one of the big reasons why AJ Styles is where he is now is because he beat John Cena multiple times clean. Mm-hmm. And even when he lost, it's kind of like, he didn't look like a chump. He looked like... You know, AJ Styles was basically playing Ric Flair for a whole year on SmackDown because he was beating people, and the big name of that was John Cena. Nakamura is on the up, is on the rise, and everybody kind of know. And it's this funny thing where it's like, even for all the criticism, complaints, it's like he hasn't lost a singles match since he's been up there, and they've been treating him as a big deal since he's been up there. And what I'm wondering is like, I expect Nakamura to win. I'm wondering how that goes on SummerSlam.
That's where, yeah.
Because it's kind of like, I could easily see, because it's kind of like, they're still behind this Jinder thing. You know, it's like still a thing. I don't know if you want to have Nakamura lose, but I could easily see Nakamura beating Jinder than Baron Corbin cashing in.
That's where all right, we're on the same path with this then. That's what I was thinking, but do you want to see another Baron Corbin Nakamura match, though? Because they haven't exactly torn the house down.
I don't want to see Baron Corbin, period.
I thought you would turn the corner on him.
No, I am not.
Oh, good, yeah, because fuck that guy.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like getting in an argument, so.
Yeah, I'll say it quick, because it's not a wrestling show, but I'll say this thing. All Baron Corbin is big cast with worse genetics. Like, I made the joke, like, if Big Cass grew up in a foster home that had mold in the walls, he'd turn like Baron Corbin. Like, he's this big, grouchy dude with his hairline falling apart, and he's always grumbling, and he wrestles a plodding style. And he's charismatic, but it's, like, on non-TV stuff. When he was, like, talking smack and behind-the-scenes stuff, when he's talking like a normal... Same thing with Cass. Like, when he's talking like a normal person... It's very believable. It's very captivating. When you have a mic in his face and he's talking promos, he sounds like a robot. He sounds like, press A to say this, then press B to say this afterwards. Like, it's, you know, I say this to get to this point, and then I say that to get to this point, and you guys don't appreciate me, but I don't care because I'm here to make money, and I'm the lone wolf, blah, 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 and then have a boring 9-minute match, and him normally win. Like, no. I'm not looking forward to Baron Corbin cashing in and winning, but I like, let's have him do it and get it and be done with it. Get out the way. It's basically my feeling about it.
Yeah, it is really a get it out of the way sort of thing. And it, well, there are also rumblings that SummerSlam is going to be Cena, Nakamura, and Jinder as well. So it would make the cash in a little bit easier, figuring, you know, Nakamura's been beaten down, or really whoever wins is so beaten down that it's like it makes more sense.
Yeah, that I could see, because it's so. Like, or I could easily see that and he don't cash in. It's like, if you have a three-way, you don't, like, Jinder can win and Nakamura have to get pinned, like Cena can get pinned,
because
I'm thinking it's not just about Nakamura put over, like, Cena wouldn't have a problem putting over Jinder Mahal. Like, that promo he cut was kind of like, you know, I'm not here to doubt you and anything like that. I'm here to put you over. Like, you've been working hard and yada, yada, yada. Like, you know, and it's kind of like John Cena's at the point now where he's like the old veteran, like he respects hard work, and I'm just here to do this thing. And yeah, I'm looking at IMDb, like he has two movies that comes out in 2018 that are filming right now. So yeah, he's gonna be.
See, it was funny. You said he's there to put people over. I'm trying to figure out what the decision was for him to beat Rusev. Now, I understand why, because they're not going to have John Cena lose in a flag match. But why have that? You've got a returning guy, two returning guys. And it's like, is Rusev that hated backstage? Or like, are they that disappointed with him that... Because he should, I mean... The way he started, he should be near the top now. And for whatever reason, he's just not. And you know being, a fan of Rusev doesn't help, because I'm borderline irrational with this by now. And I'm guessing it's because of his wife. But
yeah,
it's like, well...
Like, you know what a reason.
But then why are they pushing her so much? If they don't like her, what are they pushing her for?
They do like her, but still kind of like... The whole thing, like, you know, we like her, but we still got to kind of follow the rules and its protocol and everything and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, so, even if it is because of that whole engagement thing, was it 2 years ago? And then they even got to turn that into something on Total Divas, so they basically gave them free content. It's like, there's no one talks back there or something. And like I said, this is coming from a Rusev fan perspective, too. That outside of, you know, motherfucking everybody, I don't get it. But it's always been a petty industry, so I guess it should surprise me.
I mean, wrestling's been petty, and the whole thing is kind of like... I think the biggest thing was he was going to get that push when he went to SmackDown, and he got hurt. So the ship keeps on moving.
Yeah. And yeah, because that was, he was supposed to be gender spot supposedly.
Yeah,
but
yeah, basically. So which is makes sense. It's funny just thinking like, you know, those the two biggest matches are like that might be one of them, and then the four way with no heroes being the other one, and it kind of died. You didn't see the UFC fight, did you?
I saw the highlights, like
okay,
poor Daniel Cormier getting suckered into bowing his head eventually.
Yeah. I watched that fight because I actually ordered it just because it's kind of like John Jones and Daniel Cormier, like they had one of those old like I don't like you don't like me thing, and it says a lot where John Jones was basically like portrayed as a dirtbag, but Daniel Cormier was just so unlikable because he was just so obnoxious. Like he didn't do anything wrong, but he was so obnoxiously pious. It was almost like Bret Hart, where this guy does drugs and he's got prostitutes, and how are you gonna fight when he all coked up? And I'm a family man, and yada yada yada. And it's funny where it was like even people were cheering for him, but it was still like, you know, what people wanted John Jones to win. And watching that fight, two things kind of popped out. One is kind of like, John Jones is what happens when people always wonder, like, what if you had a real world-class athlete that had to build for, like, a certain thing and actually did the thing? Because, like, he has a body built for UFC.
Yeah.
And when you see him fight other people, it's kind of like, it's not fair. Like, it is, because Daniel Cormier... In any other era, under any other circumstance, would be the best person in the division. And, like, you know, as competitive as that fight was, it was like, I never thought John Jones was going to lose unless he slipped on a banana peel.
Yeah.
And that says something, and that says a lot. It's kind of like, you know, you're probably the second best of all time, and you might as well be the 52nd best.
Yeah, and it was funny because we went, we actually went to Atlanta and watched Jones and Rashad Evans. This is early into his title reign, and that was just a snooze fest because they just danced around for the most part. But then it was funny because Jones kept winning, and then it never occurred to me he's got a loss. I was like, wait a minute, who the hell beat John Jones? And then come to discover it was by disqualification.
I actually watched that match.
I've never seen that.
He was beating the guy. The guy was on a knee, and he got caught with the guy was on one knee. He got caught with a knee, and it's basically like. By the letter of the letter of the law, it was the disqualification, but it's like John Jones really won that fight too. Like, he was beating the dude's ass, yeah, and he basically lost. And even when it happens, people kind of like, well, yeah, he got to do this, but this is BS and everything. So it's kind of like his one loss was more of a technicality because he was beating the guy's ass so bad. He broke the rules beating his ass.
Yeah, accidentally broke the rules. That's how savage the beating was. All right. And that makes sense.
And then after the Cormier fight, like him calling out Brock Lesnar, which I didn't.
Yes.
And it's funny hearing all the things about it because it's like people saying, oh, it's a freak show. He should run over Brock. And I'm like, he should be the favorite, but this whole run over Brock Lesnar thing is like, weight classes are a thing for a reason. And I know it's the joke about, you know, Brock got popped for roids and Brock, or whatever. I'm like, Brock was UFC heavyweight champion. People tend to forget that. Like, that was a thing. He did that. He didn't have a whole lot of experience when he did it, and it happened. Brock's last fight, I specifically remember people saying, oh, you know, Mark Hunt's a heavy puncher, and you know Brock can't take a punch. Mark Hunt, all you got to do is tag him and clock him once, and it's a wrap. And Brock basically steamrolled him. Like, when he beat Mark Hunt, it was not that competitive. And for somebody who hadn't fought in a couple years, it's like, yeah, he may have been juiced, but still, it's like a win is a win. And it's another thing, you know, people remember, like, the Brock at the end of his first run. I'm like, yeah, Brock had diverticulitis.
Yeah.
It's hard being a good fighter when you get sick. And
well, I know what you mean, but even that's undercutting what that stuff does. You can't eat. You can eat, but it just inflames you immediately, so you don't even want to. And it just, without energy, you can't train.
Yeah, yeah, and, like, he almost died from that.
Yeah. Which is pretty remarkable. And, I guess it's gone?
Yeah, got treated. He finally started eating vegetables, and he got treated for it. So it's kind of like, yeah, John Jones is probably the most skilled fighter that UFC's ever had, but Brock Lesnar's still Brock Lesnar. It's like, this whole, he can just gain weight. I'm like, it's hard to just gain weight. Like, you can get fat, but gaining, like, fighting weight, like, even if John Jones, he fights at 205, let's say he bulks up to 230, 235, because he's tall enough on his frame where theoretically he could do it. You don't know metabolism-wise if he could and how that affect him. Let's just say he bulks up 230, 245. So what? So Brock still outweighs him but 40 pounds, 45 pounds? Like, if Brock puts his hands on him, Brock can treat him like a rubber band.
And it was funny. I was listening to Wrestling Observer Radio. And they start talking about it. And usually, you know, Dave Meltzer's got a pretty steadfast opinion and stuff. But when they were talking about, you know, Jones calling him out, he goes, well, you know, Jones will win that fight. Well, he should win that fight. I think the betting money would be – it was like he immediately had his opinion and then started going, well, Jones should win. And that's kind of how I saw it too, like – Jones should win that because he's what? He's a couple inches taller, like 5 inches taller than Brock, right?
Yeah, like Jones is 6'4", legit 6'4".
Yeah, and you can't, and I think what, Brock's 6'2"? He's 6'2"? No, so he ain't that much shorter than.
Yeah, it's the range. It's the
range.
The range. He's like, he's built like Sagat from Street Fighter. Like,
yes!
and that's always said, it's kind of like, it's hard to hit somebody when they got an arm that's like a foot longer than yours.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a big damn difference, where it's like, oh, Jones has a reach advantage. And it's different, like, if the reach advantage is, like, 2 or 3 inches. No, he's got an 11-inch reach advantage. Like, yeah, take a ruler and try to get past that, and then stick a ruler out. Try to get past that ruler, and then see if you can hit the guy. Like, yeah, that is hard to do when that guy can throw elbows like you can throw punches.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't think Cormier stood a chance against him.
Yeah, but it's funny where everyone's had the same ideas, like, you know, he should beat Brock. Like, he should, but it's not this whole cut and dry thing, like people making out to be like, people looking at Brock Lesnar like he's a chump. Like, Brock Lesnar's still a freak athlete too, and like, he's going to have the weight advantage where if they're just a stand-up, and Brock Lesnar is smart enough to know, I can't stand up with this guy because I'm going to get clobbered. So he's going to try to, you know, rush in. And it's like, you know, John Jones can grapple well. Like, Brock was a national collegiate wrestler, like national champion wrestler, and he'll have like 35, 40 pounds. So I don't think it's as cut as dry as people making it out to be. Like, it's like cut and dry is like Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather. That's cut and dry. This is kind of like, you know, John Jones has the skill and age thing, but Brock has the size advantage and strength advantage. Like, that's I would definitely order that fight, and I think a lot of people would order that fight. And
That's one I would I'd probably go to the bar and watch, but I'd still watch
and
it.
It would be hilarious if Brock Lesnar, you know, the timeline wouldn't fit for that. I would just laugh like it was something like Brock Lesnar beats John Jones in a fight, but then drops the belt to Roman Reigns.
I would
laugh my ass off.
Okay, well, we're spending longer on. Well, it's a combination of UFC wrestling, but I don't know. Maybe Dana White wouldn't let him bring the WWE title out there, the Universal title out to the Octagon. But that'd be hilarious. Introduce him as the WWE, you know, Universal champion, Brock Lesnar. Yeah. Then he goes in, runs over John Jones.
You know, people be like, what kind of, you know, the first thing, like, what kind of nonsense, like, is John Jones getting his payback the Royal Rumble? Like, it's funny where they work together enough where it's not that surprising, because it's kind of like, you know, CM Punk wrestled in UFC and they were talking about his WWE background, like, highlights thing. Brock was still in WWE when he fought Mark Hunt. Like, he didn't have a belt, but he was still active. And I remember the big deal was like, wait, they letting him do that? And it's kind of like, and especially how Monday promo was, it's kind of like, I think it's a little like subterfuge, like you thinking Brock loses and then fights John Jones. I don't think he necessarily will lose at SummerSlam, but it's enough doubt where you could think that. And
well, yeah, because it's built in. All Heyman has to do is say, he just beat the top three guys. There's nothing left here. And I understand there's Finn Balor, but just, you know, for the sake of this, you have to go with that and have him take off. Like, I don't need to do this anymore. I'm taking your title with me. Which make everyone mad, of course, but whatever.
Yeah, so that's funny how sports was a thing. It's like that one pay-per-view put in effect, basically affected two companies. And it's like, it made UFC a thing again, and then it made, like, you would never, it's funny where that's a fight I never even thought of. It's like John Jones versus Brock Lesnar. That's a big time fight, because it's like, John Jones is probably the most skilled person UFC's ever had. Brock Lesnar's probably, with the exception of Conor McGregor now, the biggest name, box office-wise, that UFC had. So you putting those two together in a fight that people would actually want to see, and there's doubt on who will win, and it's like, I would pay money to see that. I'd pay big money to see that.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I know it's Bellator, but even they're putting on, their business model is doing, like, the matchups. I don't want to say dream matchups, that's not it, but like, they just had Chael Sonnen and Wanderlei Silva, which, it wasn't the greatest fight, but that was a fight that, you know, UFC could never get together, even though, well, I mean, you know, both guys get suspended or whatever, but, you know, just that sort of thing. So it seemingly works for them. They're doing okay.
Yeah.
So on a bigger scale with UFC, that'd be even better.
I mean, people complain, tell me, I was like, people want to see, it's not the, you know, Meltzer used the term freak show. I wouldn't use that. It's kind of like, people want to see those fights you talk about online in bars. Like, what if such and such fought such and such? It's not necessarily like the most technical thing, or anything like, or, you know, who's the most skilled. It's like, at the end of the day, and it's like related, I know that with all sports, it's like, we focus on analytics and winning. It's still supposed to be fun. And I was thinking about that, like, in football, where it's most, the advantage they have is most of the best players are fun to watch. Like, quarterback-wise, like, you know, Matt Ryan is the only boring one that comes to mind, where it's like, I watch him, and I'm like, whatever.
Tom Brady's not the most exciting either.
No, Tom Brady does a lot. No, Tom Brady beats you up with excellence. It's like, that I can respect, because it's kind of like, you know, he's damn near 40 years old, and you never know. And the way he plays is like, if somebody told me Tom Brady was 26 or 32 or 37, I could believe all three of those things. Like, it's, you would not know watching him or watching him play that he's what, 39, he's 40, he's John Cena's age. And he's basically played at MVP level. So, and I'm not even a Patriots fan. And yeah, it's kind of like, I watch enough Patriots game to know, like Aaron Rodgers is fun to watch. Cam Newton is fun. Like, basketball players tend to be, it's not about, you know, sports will be fun. And that's the thing, is like, I gravitate to who's enjoyable, who's entertaining. John Jones and Brock Lesnar may not be the most technically sound fight, or yada, yada, yada. I know people want to see John Jones fight Gustafson again, because he gave him the best fight the first time, and cool. But if I had the choice of watching them in a rematch, like, I get to pick one fight, and I watch them in a rematch, or I watch him fight Brock Lesnar, I'm choosing him versus Brock Lesnar. Yeah.
Well, especially with UFC's financial, I'm not going to say troubles, but they're not making that money. They got a lot of debt since being sold. So, well, the new owners have the debt, I should say. But, all right, so now, for those who care about UFC and wrestling, okay, so I'm not familiar, I know the characters, I'm not familiar with this comic line, but I was reading today that Dave Bautista apparently let slip that he is going to be the Eternal Warrior for Valiant's comic book universe. So he's not only going to be playing Drax, he's going to be Eternal Warrior, which the comics have been around for a while, then disappeared, and then came back. And apparently it's a lot of creator-driven stuff. I don't know anything about this Eternal Warrior stuff, though.
Me neither.
But it, and I think Jared Leto was going to play Bloodshot. And visually, it's a cool-looking character, but I always thought it was like a ripoff of the Punisher. Again, I don't know, because I never read him. But I just thought it was funny that, you know, he's going from being Drax, and now he's going to have his second comic book franchise, if this gets off the ground. Dave Bautista, a guy that he left, and everyone kind of laughed that he just left couldn't make movies. And
not only that,
look where he is
it
now.
It wasn't just the fact that the movie thing is, first he left to, he wanted to train to be, have a mixed martial arts fight, and they're like,
yeah,
aren't you a little old to be doing that? And like, he did it, he got in shape, he had a fight, he won. And people was like, can you fight? I'm like, let me see you though. Like, most people his age couldn't jog a mile without having a heart attack. Yeah. And he trained well enough to have a mixed martial arts fight and not get murdered or killed at his age with his limited training. Like, his whole thing has always been, if I put my mind to it, I can do it. And it's like, he had a late start as a wrestler. He put, and people was kind of like, I don't know if he can make it or not. And he put his mind to it. He made it. He did the same thing with movies. And like, it's, whenever he's, and the whole thing is like, it's funny where he says, I'm a character actor. I know my role. I know my place. I know my ceiling. And I'm trying to get in where I fit in and do as much enjoyable stuff as possible and learn from things. I'm like, he's even in movies that's not necessarily good, he's always good in movies. And that's something that you can't beat. And like, you know, we talked about he's showing up in Blade Runner. Rumors are he's going to be back in the next James Bond movie, which I don't know how, considering I thought he died in the last one. But I guess we'll see if those rumors are true or not. Like, he's working actively, and kudos to him. Like, all those people laughing, who's laughing now? Like, he's getting the last laugh. Like, if WWE called him, he could probably tell him to kiss his ass and keep on moving.
Or say, hey, move that, add a couple zeros to that, and then maybe we'll talk. And he goes, my name is helping you out now, not the other way around. So, yeah, just, I don't know. I just find it fascinating. I had actually forgotten about his MMA run, and now that you mentioned, I remember him talking about it on Talk is Jericho, and he goes, you know, and Jericho asked him, he's like, you don't want another fight? He's like, oh, hell no. He's like, no. He's like, I have asthma, and I'm too old for that stuff. There's no way. He's like, if I would have gotten into it from the ground running, then maybe, but no chance.
Yeah.
I respect
funny
that
when,
though.
Yeah, it's funny where you see all these old people and you wonder, like, and they all say it's kind of like, you know, if I had the chance, I'd have done it. And it's weird because, like, Herschel, people always say the same thing about Herschel Walker, like, you know, if he was like 23 and started mixed martial arts, nobody would beat him. Like, because it's kind of like he was almost, what, his mid-late 40s? Almost 50s? And like, he was competing and wasn't embarrassing himself because he was just such a super athlete. Donnie Yen, you hear about all the time. He said he wanted to do it. He had a shoulder injury. And he said, otherwise, yeah, I'd have done UFC. And it's funny where he was kind of like one of the first actors to bring that fighting style to like movies. And yeah. You watch some of his old stuff, it's like, I remember him, he's a cop, and instead of arresting this guy, he's like, we're going to have a fight in a ring. He puts him like in like a triangle choke, and the criminal taps out, and then gets arrested. Like, it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen, because I'm like, it is so damn ridiculous. And even then, he gets cursed out at the still, like, why are you in here fighting with these criminals? Like, you got a gun, and you got, you're a cop. Why are you sparring with him? And he's like, it's fun. So you hear about this. It's funny where you hear about, like, all these athletes saying, if UFC was around when I was, especially now, because it's kind of like before it was just tough guys punching each other and like trying to last. Then it was like, I'm skilled in one thing and I'm going to, do it till the wheels fall off. And now it's kind of like you got to be good in multiple things. It's like, it's the same thing like wrestling where, you have these guys that, like, they were super college-level athletes and then chose wrestling. Not, I did it, I blew my knee out, and I have nothing else. And then, it's different how The Rock got into wrestling compared to how Roman Reigns got into wrestling, basically.
Well, athletic background, you mean?
As far as kind of, like, they both played college football. And they were both like good at they were both good at college football. And it's kind of like, Rock tried to do pros. He got hurt twice. And then it's like, I guess I'll do wrestling because my dad does wrestling. My mom is in wrestling family. I always have that. And I don't have anything else. It was almost kind of like, people kind of like didn't want him to do it. And it's like, I'm obligated to do it because my family did it and everything like that, and I'm sure I'll be good at it. Compared to like Roman Reigns is like, he went from college football to, developmental, I guess, more or less. Because it's like, yeah. Same family thing. It's like, yeah, because it's like, I didn't hear if he had a chance to play pros, but like, he went from college to, I'm doing the family business. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, in that match coming up, he's the smallest guy in that match, considering how big Roman Reigns is.
Yep. Yeah, and just think about that. That's just crazy to me. But it's funny how that's worked out. Isn't Samoa Joe the smallest guy?
No, not weight-wise.
Oh, okay.
Height-wise, Joe probably got 20, 25 pounds on Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
It's kind of like him and Brock would normally be bigger than everybody else. They probably weigh 70 to 80 pounds less than Braun Strowman.
That's just a big man. It was funny. I follow him on Instagram now, and he put a picture from like that really long. I didn't like it, but his whole promo backstage, and he goes, "I buy my shirt. It makes your traps instantly bigger." And then they showed the picture, and I was like, holy crap. His traps were gigantic looking in that shirt. I was like, what was he doing before? Like, handstand push-ups, then a few, just strict shoulder presses. Like, all right, now you look big enough. Like, now I look big enough standing still. I don't need anything else. But in between all that, another comic book universe trying to get off the ground.
On these universes.
This may be a hard sell because none of these characters are well known.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think people, I get why they're doing what they're doing, but people learn the wrong lessons from Marvel. It's like, you gotta do a movie, do a movie first. Get the first movie right.
Yeah.
And then go from there. Like, do that. Like, don't go with the whole thing, we're going to do this whole universe and we're going to go here to here to here. I'm like, no. Tie your shoes first and then step out the door. You're already talking about what you're going to do when you get to the supermarket. You didn't even leave the house yet. Like, your car may break down by the time you reach the corner because you're planning ahead and you're not planning what's in front of you. And too many people are doing that because they want that Marvel money. It's like a lot of things had to go right for them to get to that point, and a lot of stuff didn't go right. It's like a lot of that happened like luck, which people tend to forget about. And you still, it's kind of like tell a good story and have people care, you know. I won't necessarily say it's like it's a character we don't know, because like, to be honest, how many people knew Iron Man?
Yeah.
And it came out. Like, Iron Man's a big thing now, but it wasn't a big thing when it came out. It was like, you know, I remember when it first came out, I was like, well, okay. You know, like, I remember Iron Man from the cartoon that came on, and like, you know, Robert Downey Jr., that's different. And it was more than anything. Yeah, you know, if you do a movie and it works, you can do something, but you got to make people care, because it's so many eyeballs and so many money. And like Valerian proved, like, it's a reason why people do sequels and stuff that people know about, because like, you do something that's quote unquote original and you don't know how to sell it, it's like, huh, it's basically what you get.
Yeah, the Valerian had its own problems that I think people recognized from the trailer. There were two different types of trailers. There was one that concentrated on the visuals, and same from the mind of Fifth Element and Lucy. And then the other one focused on the aliens and like the goofy stuff of the movie. And I'm like, I can see this not making money. And it didn't. And especially when I went to see it, like I told you, the things you think are going to be wrong with this movie are what's wrong with the movie. And I enjoyed it for the visuals, but I think I said this on the last show that video games now are just as beautiful as a CGI movie, you know? So to sell me on the visual aspect of something, it's got to be groundbreaking as Avatar. You know?
And that's the whole thing, because I've heard the thing people say, you know, this is a beautiful, gorgeous movie and stuff and everything, but I mean, it's like the story is the story. And it's like, you can't, it's hard to do that, because especially like where the bar is set so high.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen a lot of beautiful movies. Like, you know, I'm like, Kong Skull Island still stands out, like how gorgeous that movie is. Mm-hmm. But all the beauty in the world wouldn't have made a difference if it wasn't a fun movie. It was like a gorgeous movie that also had to be fun, and it worked. And that's something I would sell. Like, if you want to sell a 4K experience to somebody, put that movie on a good TV. Like, I had just ordered the 4K, and I was watching like last week, and we made this joke when we reviewed, like, that movie is basically screen like wallpaper porn, where half the sets, like, we just filming this because it looks awesome. And it doesn't necessarily make any sense, but it looks cool, and we're gonna show it to you. So, yeah, like Valerian, I know Luc Besson stuff is like, he makes beautiful stuff that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And saying from the mind of Lucy is not like, I saw Lucy.
Yeah, I've seen that finally too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that movie made a lot of money. I still don't know how. Like, that's not necessarily a selling point for the average person. Like, you know, Fifth Element still holds up. But even then, that's a weirdo movie too. So it's like, from the mind of these weirdo movies that you might have remembered and it made no sense, we're going to give you even a weirder movie with non-movie stars.
Yeah. It's funny because even Fifth Element, that didn't do gangbusters. It became something after it went to DVD. That was one of an early DVD release, I believe. Yeah. Like,
it made
an event
DVD. It made a lot of money overseas, and it was like, that's where it made its money. Like, domestically, it was kind of like, we don't know what this is. And I can see why. Like, watching that movie, it's a weird-ass movie, and it's like, you know, all the stuff Chris Tucker's doing, the fact what Gary Oldman's doing, and the fact that, it's two funny things about that. One, or three funny things, because it's like 20th anniversary, something like that. One, Gary Oldman and Bruce Willis never have a scene together. At all.
Yeah.
They're the hero and the villain in the movie, and they never meet. They don't have a one.
Never. It was such a weirdest part.
Yeah, and two, Chris Tucker was the second choice. Prince was the first choice for that role, but he turned it down because the outfits were too effeminate. That is funny on so many levels. Like, just saying that out loud is like, you trying to tell me, you know something's up when Prince is like, that's a little too much for me. And this is still like 90s Prince. This isn't like 2017 Prince. So, and then the third thing, and this one I found out was recently, was the girl that was like the blue opera singer.
Yes.
In the movie that was like singing. She was Luc Besson's wife at the time. She was the second choice for that movie. Like the first person. Yeah. The first choice had to drop out. So he got her to do it. Then they split while filming the movie because he started dating Mila Jovovich.
Uh-huh. Well.
So, yeah, I'm like, there must be
a rough life.
Yeah, there must be some type of term in French to describe how you pull that off and not get sad. It's like, I bring you in to film this movie for me, to do me a favor, and then I'm a split to date this new girl while we're all working together. And it's kind of like, when they did the behind-the-scenes stuff, it was kind of like, you know, yeah, it wasn't an open secret. Like, they kind of had a connection, and everybody saw it. And it was kind of like trying to be diplomatic about it, but it's funny hearing Chris Tucker and Bruce Willis try to, like, say it without saying it too much. And it's funny, like, how they were describing Bruce Willis, kind of like, I'm surprised he did the movie because he was known as a dick, and he was okay. Like, it was kind of like, you know, he wasn't necessarily nice, but he was, like, professional.
Yeah.
Which, like, Bruce Willis must have always had that reputation of being an asshole.
I think he still has that, too. Which is funny,
he definitely
because
still has it.
Where is he? Like, I know he was in the Split, right? Yeah. He said he was in... Oh, shit. Spoiler, everybody. In case you haven't seen it. I mean, I know it's been out a while, but when he shows up at the end of Split... But I've seen a lot of Netflix movies with Bruce Willis in it now.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I was... Maybe I always wonder when it's like the big actors of the Netflix film. Like, did he lose money? Like, I know why Nicolas Cage is working, because he had to pay taxes because he bought an island. Or like Val Kilmer, like, had like, you know, alcohol problems. I'm like, that's like, was it divorce? I guess he divorcing Demi Moore was expensive, because Bruce is always popping up on Netflix, sleepwalking his way through a movie, and then like it's him. And sometimes Henry Cavill shows up, and sometimes Gina Carano shows up, and sometimes, you know, what's the dude, from Taylor Lautner from Twilight shows up, and it's like, yeah, he's doing a lot of these things, and like sometimes 50 Cent shows up, and I'm like, I guess, hey, if the check's clear, no matter where you get the money from. So, yeah, let's like back to that whole thing is like, you're trying to sell this big, expensive, weird movie off the reputation of other weird movies that a lot of people may not have seen or not necessarily like. And it's like, that's a lot of money spent on like a cult movie. And it's like, when I saw the previews, everybody kind of predicted what was going to happen to Valerian, what happened. It's like, you have this unknown movie from this comic no one heard of that's expensive as hell, looks weird as hell, and has two no-names as the leads in the movie. It's like, and it's during the summertime, like, what do you think going to happen?
Yeah, and the other thing is the budget. Because Fifth Element wasn't made with a large budget. And this was some ridiculous amount. I'm like, there is no way they're making this back over here.
185.
Holy shit, it was that. Budget. I was going to say 145. That is, yeah.
Yeah. Fifth Element had a big budget. It's funny when you bring that up, like, Fifth Element had a big budget for the time. Like, it was very expensive because they did a lot of stuff practical, and that's the whole thing. Like, it's, you wouldn't think about, that's one of the most technologically advanced movies that came out when it came out. Like, they put a lot of work in and money, and even Luc Besson's like, you know, if I was to do this now, I could do this in my sleep, but technology wasn't even around for me to do this stuff, so we kind of had to do it the hard way. And you forget, like, that movie is like it's a gorgeous movie. There's a lot of stuff happening, but you get to follow everything, and you're not kind of overwhelmed because a lot of it, like, stuff done to, like, you know, model scale, and they try to limit CGI because, like, CGI was still dodgy back then. for like a lot of people. Yeah. You could tell, like, it's funny where the only Terminator 2 is the only movie from that time frame where the CGI doesn't look a zillion years old. And that was like one of the first movies to do it at that level.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Terminator 2 holds up pretty well, actually.
Yeah, it just shows you, like, James Cameron knows what that, like, James Cameron is a damn genius when he comes to those things. Like, he did that, like, basically CGI with Terminator 2 underwater filming with the Abyss in 3D with Avatar. It's like, he knows his stuff. Like, all you gotta do is watch Titanic and just know, like, when it comes to, like, special effects and cutting edge stuff, he knows his things.
Yeah.
And it has to be at that, level for it to, like, stand out. Like, Valerian, like, it's not like a groundbreaking special effects thing.
No, and it's really not. And to me, it seemed like it was, all right, we got to do this. It would have been better with a smaller budget and more, you know, I'm drawing a blank on the word I'm looking for, so I'm going to say creativity. Or because imagination's there. But doing the practical part probably would have made you realize, all right, there's other stuff that's lacking here that to go with it. But I don't know. It wasn't a horrible movie. It was just when I was done, I went, okay, I saw it. Like, I probably wouldn't watch it again. So, but on a positive note, I'm guessing, since, you know, I did not get to see it, you saw Atomic Blonde.
Yes, and I did.
What I've heard is the story is what it is, but one person I read that I trust his opinion, actually, he said that this movie hopefully is setting the new standard for action choreography in movies.
Oh.
And that's what I wanted to talk to you about.
And that would probably be an understatement.
Really?
Okay. Action-wise, it's funny where it's like three or four action pieces. It is probably, top four, top five I've ever seen.
Wow.
Like, as far as, like, how, because it's kind of like, it's hype, it's impactful. Like, even more than John Wick was, it's kind of like, you could feel every damn punch Charlize Theron is throwing and getting thrown by. Like, this is when it's violent, it's extremely violent, and it's like not the like super fast weightless violence. It's like the whole. And I made the comment, and I always noticed when I rewatched John Wick 2, when he's fighting Common in that movie, when Common's fighting, he's rearing back and then punching. Like, he's throwing like a punch. Like, I'm trained to punch. Like, I'm putting my whole hip and arm and everything into it, and it's like the punch doesn't look fast, but it looks like it hurts like hell. And that's how this movie is. Like, when she's hitting people, it feels like she really hitting people with her 115-pound ass, and like using weapons and pots and pans. I think she hit somebody with like a hot plate, and it's like the action is very well done. It's a car scene in there with, you know, it's like the whole one take fight scene. Like, when you see all the fight scenes, you see the trailers, yeah, it undersells how well done it is. And she's getting her ass kicked. Like really. Like, it feels like she went through hell when she was, like, doing these fights. So, from action standpoint, choreography standpoint, it definitely holds up. And it's kind of like, you got to bring your A-game, because you've seen what the A-game looks like. And if you're not there, you're going to get clowned if you try. Like, you can't do that old Buffy the Vampire Slayer fight stuff anymore. And you can't do that Xena fight stuff. That worked then. You can't do that anymore. You can't be Summer Glau, 85 pounds, and spin kicking people that weigh 250 and look like you couldn't break a pane of glass with a hammer. Like, that don't work unless you're doing video game stuff. So, as far as choreography goes, works perfectly. As far as, like, the setting and stuff, the time frame, it works. It fits. It's a cool movie, and everything about it's cool. The casting works fine. The story, yeah, you gotta. I will say this: when I saw it and we left, I asked Darlene what she thought about it. She's like, the action was great. What happened? And I was like, I got to look on Wikipedia to figure it out. Because even then, it's like, I pay attention when it comes to movies. I'm not like one of these dummies that just miss stuff and like wonder, oh, what'd that mean? I tend to pay attention when it comes to these things. And even then, I'm watching it, and I'm like, I don't want to go into spoiler territory, but I had a lot of like, what's going on? Like, and I said that to myself like at least 4 to 5 times in this movie. Like, this is basically people say, like, if you try to put a intricate plot on John Wick, how would it come out? And the answer was, it wouldn't work. Yeah. It's like some movies don't need, like, that story didn't need that movie, or that movie didn't need that story. Basically, it's probably what the problem was. It's like, if you'd have just told a simple story with the action, it would have been a better movie. The story, and it was almost the inverse. Like, we always say, too many times, movies tell and don't show. This one had the reverse problem, where they showed and just expected you to, like, you know, keep up. And they didn't do enough telling. Like, it was a lot of talking. They still didn't tell you everything that was going on.
Well, I mean, especially when it's got some talking heavyweights. You know, John Goodman's in it. I mean, yeah. Good grief.
John Goodman and James McAvoy are both in it. They both do a lot of talking, and still it's kind of like, yeah, I'm like, you don't figure out what's going on until the very end of the movie. And when I say very end, I mean right before the credits. So, and it's kind of like, depending on how much you're invested in, you have to be very invested for it to like pay off. It's one of those things. And I'll leave it at that because I don't want to spoil it for you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to try and catch it this weekend. It's finally supposed to rain here again, so that'd be nice. Like I told you, we still haven't seen Dunkirk, and that's something she really wants to see. But how are we on time, actually? I didn't even pay attention. Oh, okay. We have about 10 minutes. Sorry, I have SmackDown on, and
I do too.
It's the Ascension again. All right, hey, you know what? Good on the Ascension. If Curt Hawkins can lose 100 matches and still get paid like crazy, at least these guys are still showing up, getting paid, and not even wrestling. You know, you still work there, so good for you guys.
But yeah.
For
yeah,
those who haven't seen SmackDown, you'll know what we're talking about.
And it is funny where you see the Fashion Police, and it's like, by all accounts and purposes, this should not work.
No,
it shouldn't work at all. And not only is it working, it's working to the point where the crowd gets excited when these skits happen. And normally it's kind of like, this stuff, but like, if you don't like it, you don't watch it. It's like, it get down the vine easy. And humor, WWE normally doesn't do the best job when it comes to humor. Like, it's funny, like, they have their gems, but the gems stand out because they had so much stinkers.
Yeah.
Like, and you notice, like, the best humor comes when it's kind of like, they had to been like, you know what? I got an idea. Like, it's probably some 26-year-old writers like, what y'all think is cool? You want to do this? Like, you know, we don't got nothing else for you. You might get fired if this don't work. The hell with it. Let's do it. And it never fails where they had these thrown together tag teams where it's like, I don't know what to do with these guys, so let's just do something. And it works. Like, the same thing with like Raw with Sheamus and Cesaro are my favorite tag team on Raw. And it's like, normally those tag teams that start where we hate each other and we have a best out of 45 feud that is in a tie, basically. And it's kind of like, you know, okay, they form a tag team, and it's like, okay, they're going to break up. And then they actually end up liking each other, and Cesaro turns heel instead of Sheamus turning face.
And the crowd actually boos him, too. That's the big thing that was the most impressive for me, is that you took a fan favorite. Even when he was a bad guy, he was getting cheered, and they boo him now. It's like, wow, nice work, guys.
Yeah, and it's kind of like they get booed for the right reason. Like, they... It's not like the whole cool. It's hard, like, because the Usos are, like, so damn good, it's hard to boo them. You only boo them because you feel like you're supposed to. It's easy to boo, you know, Sheamus and Cesaro, because, one, they beating up on the Hardy Boys, whoever I like, and, two, they're awesome at being these Euro bullies. basically saying, you know, like, we're better than you, and they, the line they gave to Seth Rollins, oh, you have a new show, Ride Alone. I laughed my ass off, because, like, simple stuff where, because Sheamus is awesome being a dickhead, and Cesaro's awesome being, like, an elitist, like, you know, I'm one of the best athletes in the company, I'm one of the best wrestlers in the company, y'all just hold me back, because I'm not some American pig that drinks beer, and that's y'all fault, not my fault. And yeah, basically, like, playing into it, and, like, Sheamus being a soccer hooligan that can fight, like, it works.
Sheamus still looks the part of a dick, which helps. Like, Cesaro's just still, to me, like, still the suave guy, so it's like, whatever. But even he's, like, getting his little digs in now, so helping the overall, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, Cesaro seems like he's, like, that investment banker that would kick a bum just to do it.
Yeah.
Like, he's, like, class, like, you know, like, he has a $5,000 dinner table, but he still kick a bum to, like, see how it would feel on his shoe. Like a Swedish movie, like some like a Lars Van Trier movie. Whenever I think of Cesaro, I'm like, you know what? He'd fit in like one of those Euro thrillers. Sheamus is like somebody, like, he just like a damn bully. And that haircut, that stupid ass mohawk, and the piercings, like, and the complexion, it all plays into it. And I like that they embrace it and go all the way in with it, and it works. So kudos to him. Like, if you get some, like, you know, you get chicken crap, do the best you can to make chicken salad.
Do we even want to bring up this Amazon show?
Might as well.
All right. This is your baby, so I'll let you go with it. And we'll round the show out on a positive.
Ugh. Yeah. So basically, you know, normally when they do these alternative history shows, it's always like, what if the bad guys win? Because I guess people like drama and stuff, and I don't know, people tend to be like, they like their sci-fi and alternate history to be dystopian, because they don't like I guess nerds don't like happiness, even though Star Trek was always about hope and peace, but that's neither here nor there. And of course HBO had their Confederate one, which now I laugh when people involved, like, oh, we didn't know it was going to be like this. I'm like, you need new friends then, because you asked the wrong people. Like, how'd you think it was going to be? But Amazon is also in the alternative history business, and they have this show called Black America coming out that posits that when the slaves were freed, they actually got reparations, and they formed their own mini country with three states from the South, and things happen now where they're kind of like, you know, this tense alliance with the rest of America as they both try to navigate the 20th century. Now, it's a tricky thing. When people always think about slavery, they always think about the one side. Like, people are Confederate, but the issue with Confederate was kind of like, you don't really have to wonder, like, how would it be if Confederacy won? It's like, there's still states that rock the Confederate flag. I can go to work and look a parking lot at my job, and there are people with Confederate flag on their trucks and their cars. Like, so, unlike the man in the high castle, they're not rocking the Nazi flag in Iowa or Idaho. They're rocking the Confederate flag in states. This is still a thing. People still get mad when you try to take down these Confederate statues. You can go to a lot of major universities in America, and they have Confederate statues of people. So, you don't, like, that was the whole baseline, like, you don't got to imagine it. Just go out the damn door. Whenever you bring up reparations or black people getting stuff that they were supposed to get and didn't get, people lose their damn minds. They all, because the whole thing is like, what about me? How come they get to get something? How come I don't get something? The race card and affirmative action ain't fair. And my whole thing is like, you want to switch? How about I give you get 40 acres, I get your privilege. Let's see how that go. And whenever you say that, people tend to shut up. Like, this, you never get the alternative history shows where a positive happens. So, and this is the one where you can see, like, black people definitely watch this, because we always wonder that and think that. And I don't really talk about it a lot, but I'm always kind of like, how would things be different if you got that? Because, and we always ask that stuff, like, the whole GI Bill thing. that was one of the big change. Like when that first happened, that was one of the booms that helped when World War II was over. That helped boom the economy. There were a lot of, but black people didn't get that. That was a white soldier only thing. So it was like a whole generation of people that fought, and it's kind of like we didn't get those benefits. It's a whole generation of people supposed to get the reparations or get lands like that. They never got it. And people been playing catch up. What if you didn't have to play catch up? How would things look? And that's something that you could easily see, because it's not this whole what if people still had slaves, or what if, you know, the Confederacy was still a thing. Like, there's not a positive in that unless you like slaves or you like slavery. There's a positive in somebody saying, like, you know, like if the Japanese got, like if internment never became a thing for the Japanese during World War II and it has kept their stuff. Like, those are things, those are simple things that can lead to stuff. And you can say things. So if this is done correctly, you can see interest in the show. I don't know if it'll be done correctly, because Will Packer is one of the people that's doing it. Like, he's done Think Like a Man and some other movies. Like, he's a lot of black movies come out. Like, he's the producer behind that. Aaron Magruder is the other name behind it, and he's the guy that did The Boondocks. And that's the guy that kind of gives me pause when it comes to that. Because, you know, the old saying where it's kind of like there's a line you cross. You know, if you cross that line, like, just tip over the line, like, you know, the line is 10, and if you're going to go 10, go 10.5.
Yeah.
Somebody made a good point on Twitter saying, like, he's the type that goes, like, 13, and he'll go there all the time. It's like, you cross the line so much that you forget the point you're making. And it's, like, it's something to be said, like, The Boondocks was a funny show that kind of pissed off a lot of people, and not just white people. And it says something where it was so, he got fired from his own show, because it was like, it was so much drama and issues doing his stuff. And yeah, it's like, it's a way to do this show and kind of show what would happen if black people got what they were supposed to get, and how would that go, and the effect it would have on them, and the effect it would have on white people. And because, like, even then, it's like, you bring up this question, and you brought up, we talked about before the show started, it's like, imagine if a president came out and said, like, you know what, we should have did this a long time ago, we didn't, but we're going to fix a problem, and we're going to find a way. You can't get 40 acres, but we're going to give you the equivalent of, you're going to get reparation. We're going to write you a check. Can you imagine the rage and vitriol that would go in around the rest of Americans?
Oh, yeah.
Like, all these people saying, you know, that's not fair, how they get that, and everything. Like, people would lose their mind. Or some people would be like, you know what, I got a black grandfather. Like, or something like that. All of a sudden, I'm not white anymore. Like, I'm 164th black.
Oh, I'll be trying to find that. I have no leg to stand on. I already know that.
Like,
but
yeah, people would definitely try to, like, and it's a thing where people get mad at that, but they don't ask the reason, like, why is that thing in the first place? Like, it's a reason that comes up because we were property. You weren't, like, yeah. And it's like, that stops in its tracks. It's like, oh. And it's like, this, it reminds people, like, people don't remind themselves of history. And we can wrap up on this. Like, the one, TV is important, and we talked about all the time. It's like, people don't read books anymore. They don't read history books. They get their history from TV, from shows. And it was this big stink because BBC was doing this miniseries, and it was kind of like, you know, the Roman Empire, something like that. Or it was like something back then, and they had black people. And they were like, what type of diversity, snowflake stuff is this? It's like, the Roman Empire had, they had black people in there. It was spread out. They were in Africa. Black people were in Africa back then. They actually had a black emperor before. Like, the Roman Empire was huge. The area was diverse. They were in Asia. They were in Northern Africa. They were all over Europe. It wasn't just the guys you saw on 300. And that's the problem. When you see these shows, when you see them like 300 and everything like that, and most, and it's almost all white, and the only black one you see is like a slave, then people think, oh, it must have been all white back then, and they were the ones doing technology. And then when you try to educate them, it's like you're on your snowflake mode. And that's, and it leads to issues. The whole, when comics do that, it's like, oh, why we gotta have such and such, gotta be a woman and black people, why can't it be the way it was? I'm like, you compare it back in the day when you couldn't all you could do was white people. If you try to do something else, you wouldn't get published. Or are you talking a day where it's like they didn't want black people to read and they whitewashed history? It's like when you tell the truth, people don't believe it's the truth because you've been lying so much. And that's the biggest thing that affects, especially in sci-fi. Like, I'm amazed and like gobsmacked at the amount of racism that is found in like nerd stuff and like science fiction stuff, comics, video games. Like, it is, I don't, like, what are you doing? It's, you can believe in green people, you could believe in cat people, people with forearms, but you can't believe in a woman being in charge or a black person. Like, how you gonna be a fan of Star Trek and be a racist?
Which the entire point of it was that, well, I mean, I guess they had the Klingons with the bad guys in the original, but that was the entire point of it, was that all of that was settled. And so it's like to bring that into it, it's like, do you not understand the especially with Star Trek, do you not understand the concept of the show?
But then it's like
humanity came together. Yeah. That's why they were able to accomplish this.
And it says something that William Shatner's on that dumb stuff. It's like, you starred in the damn show and you don't get the point. So
wait, what did he do?
I can't. No, he's been this whole thing as like, you know, all these liberal snowflakes, they just want to tell their truth, not the truth. Basically, all the stuff that Captain Kirk was fighting against and Star Trek is William Shatner in real life. Like, do not follow William Shatner on Twitter unless you want to be depressed.
Here's the thing.
It's a reason.
You can just get off Twitter. You don't have to worry about any of these dummies.
Exactly. Like, it's a reason why a lot of castmates couldn't stand him. Like, it wasn't jealousy.
Yeah.
And it's a reason, and it makes sense now why he hated Leonard. Like, he was so damn jealous of Leonard Nimoy. Like, why is William Shatner such a dick? And now you know why. It's like, yes. So the whole thing with alternative history is like, it's a way to do it if you're skilled in doing it and if it's serving a purpose. And people tend not to like it because normally it's always negative stuff. Oh, what would happen if women couldn't vote? Or what happened like if black people were still slaves? Like, why would I want to personally think that? Why would I want to know? Like, I already have a general idea of how it would be if the Confederacy won. Why would I watch a TV show like that? Yeah, I could watch a TV show like, say, if, you know, such, like, if Bruce Lee never died or some stuff like that, or something good happened. You know, like, I watch good stuff all the time. Like, you know, something different. Not, oh, what if the Nazis won? I don't want to see that for. The Nazis weren't the good guys. I can make a guess on what. I can read enough history books to see how they were acting when they were alive. So add that plus technology, I can make a guess on how it would be.
There's an entire channel devoted to the Nazis right now. It's called the History Channel. So, you know, if I want, I already know how it would be if they won, and it wouldn't have been fun. So,
All you got to do is go on TV. Like, I've seen Richard Spencer enough to see how that looks. It's going to be some jackass in a tweed shirt talking about, we want to wipe me out. No thanks. I like living. I like being around. I'm not trying to get put in an oven. That sucked. Like, it sucked when they did that to the Jews. Like, the Nazis were the bad guys for the longest. They've always been the bad guys in every damn video game they want that's ever been made. Like, if you wanted, there was never any controversy on them being bad guys. Unlike when Arab terrorists were the bad guys, or African warlords, or AIDS, like everybody else, it was like, you know, can we move on from this? You never said that about the Nazis until now. Now it's like they got Captain America being a Nazi, and it's like, is it allowed to punch a Nazi? Yes, it's allowed. It's allowed to punch a Nazi, so no thanks. I don't want to see when the bad guys win. Tell me a story like when the good guys win.
I don't mind the bad guys winning, but because, I mean, you have to have the conflict to it, but yeah, the Captain America thing, I don't read Marvel comics. I just keep up with like what's going on, and that, from what I've seen from that Secret Empire, that just looks like a disaster. And maybe it would help if I read Marvel comics, but I don't.
Nope.
So
it wouldn't help.
But I mean, now there's like a dream world or something with a guy that looks like Steve Rogers, the Red Skull's there, and somebody else, and then Falcon wasn't Captain America anymore, and now he is coming back to be Captain America, I'm like, okay, I don't care. I'll see how the, because they already said it's not amnesia, it's not the cosmic cube, it's not a fake story. And I'm like, then how do you redeem Steve Rogers at the end of this?
People, the only excuse people make, like, well, you know, it's the cosmic cube, and we know it's going to get retconned, so it's stupid. At least it's not going to be permanent. And now, if they're saying it's not, then, like, that's like if you made, like, you know, Batman part of the Klan.
Yeah.
Like, basically, like, yeah, like, we're going to tell a story like a Batman joined the Ku Klux Klan, and, like, he's lynching people. Like, why? Like, what point are you... You're taking a character that's like true justice, American way, all the good things about America, and you just turn them into like the bizarro version to, for what? It's like, especially like, you know, during this time frame, like now, like you gotta, I know it's the whole thing is like, you don't want to be a victim of circumstance, and you don't want to be like influenced by the wrong, you want to tell your story. But you can't be a dummy either. You got to pay attention to the temperature of the times you're in.
Yeah.
And you want to tell stories that people, like, even if they don't agree with it, they may want to read. There's nothing I've heard about this that makes you like, oh, I want to buy a Marvel thing. Like, it turned me off, like, almost to the point where I'm about to cancel my Marvel Unlimited subscription. Or if I use it, I'm just going to read old stuff. It's like, I try to give comics a chance, and the first thing that came up was Civil War II. And by, like, issue 3, I'm like, you know what? Nope.
Yeah, I started reading Civil War when we went to Cancun, and I never, like, the original. I've never read it. I'd seen the highlights, whatever else, and so, you know what? I need to get back to that. Damn, because remember that Marvel sale they had? I downloaded so much stuff that I actually need to go through and start reading the stuff I spent money on. But yeah, I don't know. I know Marvel's gone through their changes, and now it looks like they're putting stuff back together. Okay, but if something good came out of it, I mean, I don't know how you get out of it, but whatever. It's their company; they can do what they want. Especially, they can do what they want when their movies make $800 million every time.
But that the whole it's funny where the comics were the fuel for the movies.
Yeah, that's true.
And now it's kind of like, do you even trust the comics to keep fueling these movies? Like,
yeah,
I'm like, yeah. It's like, it says something where most of the stuff is like old stories. Or like, because it's like, imagine this, like, imagine if they did a Spider-Man movie and it was based on, you know, One Last Day. And it's like, oh, you remember, we don't think Peter Parker should be married, but I don't believe in divorce. So I'm going to make a deal with Mephisto to get rid of his marriage to save Aunt May. Like, imagine seeing that in a movie.
Or hell, even the, Civil War 2. No, it was a Secret Empire. That Miles Morales is supposed to kill Captain America?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who would want to... Well, first, you gotta introduce Miles Morales, but then who wants to see that? Like, who wants to see Spider-Man killing Captain America?
Like, nobody.
Yeah.
Like, even Spider-Man 3. Can you imagine if Spider-Man 3 came out? You remember when Peter smacked the crap out of Mary Jane?
Yeah.
Like, nobody... And I remember watching that. I'm like, huh? Like, I know the point they're trying to get. No, I don't want to see that. Like, no. Like, that's just... And that was back then where it's like, misogyny wasn't the... It's not the thing it is now. Like, you would never see that on Marvel's Watch now.
Yeah.
Like, something like that. It's like, even then, it's kind of like, still, I was like, yeah, like, we make all the jokes about Fantastic Four when Reed just smacking people. I don't want to necessarily, but I don't want to see that on the screen. No. Like,
I want my heroes to be the heroes. Yeah, they can be flawed, they can argue with each other, but I want my heroes to do heroic things, and I want my bad guys to do the bad things, you know?
Yeah, like, it says a lot, like, you know, people complain, how come they didn't have Iron Man being an alcoholic?
Because that wasn't fun.
Yeah, like, you seen him drunk, and that was awkward when it was then. It's like, you really want to, alcoholic Iron Man played by Robert Downey Jr. who had serious drug issues? Like, no, I want to see stuff, like, conflict is fine, the heroes falling down is fine, but not the point where it's like, I don't want to watch. I don't want to ever get to the point where it's uncomfortable watching, because the point of entertainment is to be, when it's superhero movies, I don't need to feel like slave dramas, basically. Is yeah. what I'm getting the full point. Like, if you get to that point where it's like, and the closest you can get to that without overstepping, like a movie like Logan, where it's sad, but it's sad to the, it's part of the story. It's never like watching something where it's like you cringing. It's like it's sad because the story is sad, but the story makes sense and it makes sense to the character. It's not like he's walking around. It's not like he's smacking X-23 or something like that, or he's pushing, you know, Professor Xavier down some steps in his wheelchair, like that type of cruel thing. It's like it's sad because it's just you seeing heroes you grew up with like becoming old and mortal, and yeah, stuff like that. You can see that. So yeah, it's like the comics get your head out your ass. Like you just, it's almost like you just doing stuff just to do it. So for people to talk about it, it's like, oh, and it gets to the point where it's like, nah, grow up.
On that note, let's get out of here, because I have something misogynistic to talk about off the air with you real quick, and you can probably figure out who it's going to be about if you're still watching what I'm watching. So anyways, yeah, you guys don't get to hear everything. So thanks for listening. You can follow Stunk Granny on all social media. Find it on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever else. Yeah, Stunk Granny as well. I'm out of here. We'll talk to you guys next week.
For Jeremy Mays, I'm Shahida Dohadi, and if you're a superhero, don't smack your woman. We are out.